Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's the Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. It's Father's Day, and we here at the Real College Podcast thought we'd do something extra special for our fathers this year. In honor of dads everywhere, we are giving them a podcast, their very own episode, one they can brag to their neighbors about and listen to with pride for years to come. First up, reporter Hannah Weichel shares a story about a traveling family band and explains why some rock stars go soft. And then later, producer Max Fuller explores why one group of fathers tend to get left out of all of the festivities. But first, I want to call my dad.
It's Kevin.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, buddy.
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can a little bit. Okay, so... So can you tell me about a time that your dad just embarrassed the hell out of you?
Well, you know, my dad was he's a pretty proper guy, pretty straight-up guy. He would never overtly go out and try to embarrass me. But I do remember one time when I was maybe 13, 14 years old, you know, and peer pressure during that period of time is pretty intense. And this was for the football end-of-the-season celebration. And you talk with most of the guys were going to wear either their jerseys or, you know, if they had a dress up at that time, it was cool to wear a colored shirt and just a vest. But my dad said, nope, you need to respect the coach. You need to respect the game. So you're wearing a full suit. I was the only guy there wearing a full suit. So I was embarrassed. Yeah. I mean, you want to fit in with everyone else. And I didn't quite fit in.
More Father's Day fun coming up on the Real College Podcast right now.
Quillen and Kim Rowe of the Rowe Family Singers have been at it for over 11 years and have been rocking Monday nights at the 331 Club in Northeast Minneapolis for almost that long, back since the club harbored a rougher crowd.
Because up until this point, the 331 had been literally a meth bar. Like it was a biker gang bar and meth and heroin and stuff. You know, we had been married at that point, I think just 2 years or something. And so it was still like, there's no way I'm bringing my new bride to this crazy place, this terrible bar.
But the bar had just changed hands. Jarrett Ullman had just taken on the 331, and Friends of the Rose convinced them to play a show.
We came down here, and it had just opened with the Ullmans, and Jarrett is the same age as us, and so we just kind of got to talking, you know, and we really had a fun time both talking with him and playing the show. And so we left, and Kim said, because the band was still pretty new then, she said, we should talk to them and see if they'd want to have us play every week. Here we are, yeah. 11 years later.
Woo-hoo. The Rowe Family Singers draw a pretty big crew on Monday nights, enough so that it's tough finding a spot in the dark, noisy club. On this particular Monday, there was even a baby stroller parked in the mix, but it didn't belong to Quillen and Kim, who have two kids of their own. Their girls, Elsbeth and Oni, have actually led a venue transition for the Rowe Family Singers.
When we started doing this, you know, it was all bars, and it was fun. I like being out late. I like being able to, you know, really rock hard and, you know, hit it really hard. But
we don't play as many bars. We bars from Minnesota. We try to do a lot more of the kid-friendly festivals and libraries and stuff like that.
A quick look at their summer gigs is telling. Nokomis Farmers Market, the Minnesota Zoo, Tangletown Gardens, and Golden Valley Library. Besides Mondays at the 331 Club, it's clear their once hard rockin' lifestyle is going a bit soft.
I envisioned, you know, living in a tour van and traveling all the time. I didn't think my tour van would be a minivan with kid seats in it. I didn't think that...
and popcorn on the floor.
I didn't think that, like, instead of, you know, the typical stuff that you hear about when you think about it as being a rock star, that it would be like changing diapers in the back of a minivan. And
Quillen and Kim recall a specific incident in the back of that minivan that the whole band struggles to forget.
There's one show that we were out somewhere, and like right before we're going on stage, like one of the kids got really sick, and like
explosion.
If you've ever taken care of kids, like the poop can come out of the diaper and up the back and ruin, you know, it gets everywhere. And this is in the van. So like, you know, everyone's like piling out of the van because of this terrible, terrible smell. And, you know, there's...
You left me with it though. I got Nina.
That's the worst part is like, it's me and, you know, three guys and Kim. And we're all just laughing and Kim's stuck changing the diaper and we're making terrible Beatles jokes about Ringo Starr. I mean, he had to be there.
Still, the band takes the kids and a bit of style cramping in stride. And the Rose say their girls still tag along often, even after the diaper disaster, and sometimes even join them on stage.
The younger one, our five-year-old now, she has started showing an interest in being on stage with us. So she's come and she'll play her guitar and she dances with Kim. And she's got a fiddle, and so she'll play her fiddle sometimes, and that's really rewarding. The seven-year-old, though, she keeps saying, "Oh, I couldn't. I've got stage fright.
Stage fright.
So she,
but she sings and dances at home all the time.
All the time.
When the Rowe family singers play a faraway festival or tour the country, though, the girls stay at home with their other family members. Quillen says that's where they will be this Father's Day.
We'll be traveling.
We'll be spending 12 hours in the van. Driving home without the kids. We'll
Happy
be in
day for you.
Yeah, we'll be in we'll be coming home from a festival in southern Missouri and the kids will be home with their grandparents, which is great, but
the Rowe family singers are celebrating their 11th year at the 331 Club next month. But if it's Elsbeth and Oni you're wanting to see, maybe try a local farmers market. For Real College Podcast, I'm Hannah Weichel. For the Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePain, bringing you this week's Word on the Street. Tomorrow, Black Pistol Fire is playing at the Triple Rock Social Club. An Austin-based rock duo with a penchant for blurring genre lines, Black Pistol Fire recently released their fourth studio album, Don't Wake the Riot. Off that album, here's their song, Bad Blood.
Catch you coming back my way. I know you know, she said.
On Tuesday, Built to Spill will be playing at First Ave. The group returned in 2015 with their signature indie rock sound on their eighth studio album, Untethered Moon, which is their first record since 2009's There Is No Enemy. From their album, Keep It Like a Secret, here's the song, The Plan. On Wednesday, Zella Day is playing at the Triple Rock Social Club. The native Arizonan has used her music as a form of self-realization, resulting in an intricate, organic, almost ethereal sound unconfined by traditional genre boundaries. From her 2015 album Kicker, here's the song Hypnotic. I wanna be on the front line, knotted up suit ties, talking like a headstrong mama. Got a picture in your wallet, making me a habit, wearing your vintage t-shirt. Like the girls from your hometown, sweet blooded and I'm stranded. See if I can stand it, drinking in the shallow water. Magnetic, everything about you, you really got me now. You did it.
a bandage, touch on the outer surface. Bright eyes of the solstice, wherever your mind is headed for a freight train city. Locked up till you're moonlit, brushing my hair back, feeling your lips on my cold neck. Magnetic, everything about you.
On Thursday, Peter, Bjorn, and John will be playing at the Fine Line Music Cafe. Influenced by the sounds of classic 60s Baroque pop and new wave, the group has returned to its roots with their most recent album, Breaking Point, their first album since 2011. From that album, here's the title track, Breaking Point. That's it for this week's Word on the Street. I'm Emily LePain, and you're listening to the Real College Podcast.
Can you tell me the funniest moment that you've had with your father or involving a father?
It might have been for Christmas or something. We were all saying our goodbyes, and he goes, just think about it. Next time we get together, it could be for a funeral. The question is whose, you know. But yeah, he always kind of had a little darker sense of humor, a little more tongue-in-cheek.
Would you say that you've kind of inherited that darker sense, or are you a bit brighter?
I'm a combination between him and my mom. My mom has more of a practical, joking sense of humor. My dad is, he's a storyteller. He's got a great memory for details and really can animate a story just from his memory, and he can really tell a good story, and I kind of inherited a little bit of that from him.
We play soccer, and I put his shoes, and he was looking for them, and he couldn't find it. So at the end, he couldn't play because I had them.
Does he like soccer a lot?
Yes.
So maybe that wasn't funny for him, but...
Yeah, but the thing is that I lost mine, so he didn't know that I had them, so...
memory I have my dad doing funny stuff is Halloween. He would always dress up in some scary costume, sit out front of the house and on a tree trunk. And as we walked by, he would pretend he was fake, you know, a statue, and then he would freak us out. Like this. That's a good memory I have of my dad. Do you have any memory, funny memory you want to share?
The truffle shuffle.
Well, we watched The Goonies once, and I had to demonstrate to him what the truffle shuffle was before we watched the movie. So I did, and he thought it was hilarious.
Well, my dad is the epitome of great punchlines and a poker face. And so my husband was going to Sweden, and we're Swedish, and so my dad said, be sure to say hi to the Johnsons for me. And you had it was like, that was just so typical of my dad. He was great with the punchlines. Somebody would say, do you want some wine with your meal? And he'd say, no thanks, I'm not driving. Quick-witted and funny and known for his personality, so.
What's the funniest thing that you can tell me that your dad has ever done?
My dad changed his clothes in a public parking lot. We were going to a beach, and he just changed his clothes right there. He put on a swimming suit right there. We were horrified. Being teenagers, no one else seemed to notice. So that's what I've learned now as a parent. Nobody else cares except for your own children.
You know, when I was a kid, he used to dress up as a clown and come to not only all our birthday parties, but he used to go to the 4th of July parade in our city.
big city or?
No, very small.
So he was a well-known clown.
Yes. Right. The firemen knew him.
This is actually when I was younger. I was a big Barbies fan. I had every Barbie you could ever imagine. And so for Christmas, my parents got me a Barbie tent and a whole like dress-up stuff. And so when it was just my family and I didn't have anyone to play with, but I was really excited to use it. So I made my dad go in to the Barbie tent with me, and I put on like Barbie earrings on him and all sorts of like a crown and everything. And he was the Barbie princess of the tent.
Right here is where I'm supposed to do my big introduction. Sometimes I ask a rhetorical question or I say something really clever and witty to introduce the topic, but this story is a little different. This time nobody wanted to talk to me about the topic. I mean, there's plenty of journalists, experts, members of organizations that could have talked to me and benefited this story immensely, and yet my inbox shows no responses. So why is it that nobody wants to talk about the myth of the absentee black father?
I am the father.
Going strictly off the eye test, I certainly believe that black fathers were around less than their white counterparts. Growing up black, a lot of the kids I knew didn't have fathers in their household. Like, a lot. And every time I turned on the TV or a movie that included a black family, typically the family was never nuclear. And I don't know if you've ever watched Bill O'Reilly, but if you have, you would think that no black kid in America had a father.
The African American community is being devastated by the collapse of the family. And it all goes back to an alienation of young black men in this country for a number of reasons, but primarily because they're angry they didn't have a family and their father abandoned them and all of that. White people don't force black people to have babies out of wedlock. And in many black precincts, there's chaos in the streets, in the schools, in the homes. The lack of involved fathers leads to young boys growing up resentful and unsupervised.
So where does this idea of the absentee black father come from? Well, unsurprisingly, like most black history in this country, it starts with slavery. Many black men were removed from their families when they were sold off to other plantations or killed by the horrid conditions of slavery. This persisted for hundreds of years, disrupting the nucleus of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of black families. Even after slavery was abolished, many black men were forced to work in slave-like conditions for a large majority of their days just for their families to survive, not to mention the over-policing of black men that has sent millions of black men to prison for petty crimes and continues to do so to this very day. So under these conditions, yes, many black men were removed from their families, and the idea of the absentee black father had some truth to it. Today, however, statistically, that just isn't true. According to a 2013 study by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, more black fathers live with their children than not. 78.2% fed or had meals with their children compared to 73.9% of white fathers. 70.4% bathed, diapered, or dressed their children daily compared to 60% of white fathers. 34.9% read to their children daily compared to 24.9% of white fathers. And even black fathers living away from their children outperformed all other races in the categories listed above and several others. So, if all this is true, why is the myth of the absentee black father still as pervasive today as it ever was? A lot of it has to do with stuff that I've already talked about. Many news outlets on both sides of the political spectrum, might I add, sensationalize the idea that black fathers aren't around for their families.
For black fathers in America, it's no laughing matter, because many experts say there's a crisis when it comes to black fathers in this country.
Plenty of black men in particular who got plenty of excuses as to why they're not involved and more, you know, around their children.
More than 72% of children in the African American community are born
out of wedlock. That means absent fathers. And the studies show that lack of a male role model is an express train right to prison.
Too many fathers are also missing. Too many fathers are MIA. Too many fathers are AWOL.
TV shows and movies aren't necessarily helping either. The black families that tend to appear on TV and movies are often fatherless, although primetime sitcoms like Black-ish and The Carmichael Show featuring nuclear black families are trying to rectify this image. Another huge part of the reason that this myth thrives to this day is the very reason that I've had to do this story solo. People don't want to talk about it. As a country, there are so many opportunities for us to be having these kind of discussions that could dispel the myths of black fatherhood and many other harmful stereotypes of black people. Too often, though, these discussions are relegated to talking head debates on news networks that don't do anybody justice. So if we really want to get the word out that black dads are rad, we gotta start by talking about it. For the Real College Podcast, this is Max Fuller.
So every week at the Real College Podcast, we like to sit down with our good friend Luke Michaels, music director here at Radio K, to get us a little bit of insight into this week's weekly release spotlight. This week is no different. Luke, what do you have for us this week?
I'm glad you consider us good friends.
Oh, good. That's friends. Very sweet. Yeah, fast friends.
This week we have an album by a musician called Oscar. It's an album called Cut and Paste. It's very good, and I feel like the reason that I chose it was because of my weakness for like really well-written pop songs, because that's exactly what this is, and pretty much hits you immediately that it's just like a really good like pop album.
Sweet.
Like indie pop album. And it's really cool because of that. He actually has a pretty interesting life. His parents were also like musicians. They fronted the band called The Regents, and actually his father went on to kind of be one of the early acid house musicians.
Really?
Like, and so then he comes from this, and then goes a totally different direction as like these really like lo-fi made in his bedroom pop songs. And that's kind of how he began and took off and started writing more and more songs like this and refined his sound so well. I feel like Only Friend is one of my favorites on the record, and it's a duet that he has with Marika Hackman. And it's so sweet. It's like so sweet to listen to, and it's so catchy at the same time. I actually like woke up with the chorus melody in my head, like woke up in bed and like had the chorus in my head and spent like an hour trying to find it and found it. It had crept its way subliminally into my mind. That's how you know. That's how you know it's a good pop song.
For sure.
And, yeah, so, and I would also say it's probably my favorite duet of the year so far.
Okay.
I think I'd go on record and say that.
Is that a long list?
It's not a super long list, but it's definitely at the top of that short-ish list.
Right,
so,
right.
We're actually this week highlighting a song called Sometimes. And it's the first song on the record and has a totally different vibe. It uses his really, really deep voice in like a totally different way, in a much more playful and fun way. And it's a really fun, cool way to start the record. And it's, again, always catchy and always like super nice to listen to.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to listen to that now. It's called Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else you needed to add?
That's all I had.
That's
for
it.
You.
All right. Well, this is Sometimes by...
by Oscar,
Oscar,
off of Cut and Paste.
Cool. Thanks, Luke. That's it for the Real College Podcast. My thanks to two brand new intrepid reporters, Hannah Weichel and Emily Allen, for their contributions to today's show, as well as producers Emily LePain and Max Fuller. The show is produced by Max Fuller, Jackie Renzetti, and Emily LePain. Patrick Sharkey, that's me, is the managing editor. And you guys have a great Father's Day. We'll see you next week.
Friday, I'm freaking out, so let me through.
shit's a fool.